you want the mic? Okay. Okay, go ahead.
They have to start.
They're right there.
Okay, they can start.
Sarah, come on, we gotta go.
Where are we going?
Canaan, I had a vision from God.
Are you sure? What about all of our stuff?
Lot's bringing it. He's coming with us.
Well, how long is it gonna take us to get there?
I don't know, but I got a map. I got GPS. It's God's personal service.
But it's we're in the desert, it's so hot. I hope it don't take us very long. We have to leave all of our friends behind, and I hated to do that. We're gonna have to start all over again. Are you sure this was God?
I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go. Are we there yet?
Not quite. We're going to have to go down to Egypt because there's a famine in Canaan. But I got to ask a favor of you.
What's that?
When we get there, Pharaoh's men are going to look at you and see how beautiful you are. And they're going to take you from me. And if you're my wife, they're going to kill me. So tell them you're my sister.
Are you sure about this?
Hey, it's a half-truth.
Okay, uh-oh. Well, they're coming now. If they come back and take me, are you sure you want this? Are you sure you want me to do this?
Sure. They're going to give me manservants. They're going to give me animals and treat me right.
Okay, I'll go with them then. I will maybe see you later.
Maybe.
Maybe.
So when the princes of Pharaoh saw Sarah, they praised her to Pharaoh. And she was taken into Pharaoh's house. And for her sake, Pharaoh dwelt well with Abram. And he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys, and camels. But the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go." And Pharaoh gave men orders concerning him, and they sent Abram away with his wife and all that he had.
Jehovah Jireh is coming up.
Oh.
As some of you know, my family met in World War II. My dad is from Long Island, up there on Oyster Bay was the area that he was from. Then they moved over to Huntington Square. My mom is from Nebraska, over by North Platte River, so it'd be on the western side of that. And once my mom and dad got married, they moved around the country, but I continued to find them. But what did happen was my mom decided that she didn't want her son to become a wimp. So I was sent out to Nebraska for probably 5 or 6 years. And going out there, my parents had, I don't know if you all remember this, the station wagons with the back seat that looked backwards. You saw all of America looking backwards. You had no idea what was going on in front. And my mom, you know, her name would have been Kate, she always packed lunch. Now, going to Nebraska, that would have been probably some 25 hours. And my mom would pack peanut butter and jelly. There would have been eight of us in the car, eight of us in this station wagon going to Nebraska from Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. That's where we lived. And, you know, about 3 hours into it, Mom would start to pass out the peanut butter and jelly because there were four sisters and two boys. I'm one of the two. And there was always drama. Have any of you traveled? And then there was drama.
Yeah.
Well, there was always drama. And so Mom would pass out the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches because nobody could talk because the peanut butter kind of smelled. You go, and you couldn't get any words out. Anyway, what we have in the scriptures with Abraham and Sarah is a road trip. And if you enjoy road trips, you'd fit right in on this trip. If you don't like road trips, and some of my sisters to this day don't like road trips because it reminds them of these trips to Nebraska. But here we are. We're traveling. And if you look, if you got sermon notes, you'll see that Abraham and Sarah would be a part of a family at the bottom of the Euphrates River. So that's over in the Persian Gulf. And it's called Ur, U-R. And I had somebody ask me even a week or so ago, Bill, where is the land of the Chalcedians? Well, that's Ur. And it is the land between the Tigris and the Euphrates that comes up out of the Persian Gulf. And because it's a river like a lot of rivers, just like the Mississippi, if you go down to New Orleans, what you're going to find is the silt has backed up and that city has moved over the years. And that is true with the Tigris and the Euphrates and this land or the city called Ur, which is where Abraham and Sarah and Abraham's father would come from. His name would be Terah. Anyway, God says, okay, time to go. And so they get going, and on your map, if you can see, and it's small print, the Euphrates, they follow the Euphrates north. And so coming up out of the land of Ur, it looks like this. The whole thing is going to look like a triangle of the map or the route they took. But they go from Ur, and they go up to this land of Haran, H-A-R-A-N. They get up there, and Abraham's father, or Abram, God changes his name from Abram to Abraham. Abram means exalted father. And you would know in the scriptures when Jesus recites the Lord's Prayer, he says, Abba. And that is the Semitic word for father. So here's Abraham, whose name is exalted father. His name gets changed by God to Abraham, and it means father of the multitudes. And whenever you see an M at the end of Hebrew words, it means a plural. That's what it is. So here is Abraham, who's going to become the father of the multitudes. So they're up in Haran, and Terah dies, and Abraham gets this call. And so that's where we are, and we will take a peek from right there. And it says there in chapter 12 of the book of Genesis, now the Lord said to Abram, and whenever you see the word Lord in the book of Genesis, it's either Jehovah or it's the well Elyon. Elyon means Lord Almighty or God Almighty. So it's the powerful one. You need to know probably, too, as we're starting into this, that the people over in, it would have been the Sumerians, over there in the land of Ur, worshipped the moon. And so Abraham's family were moon worshipers. And when you start to dig into the literature, you're going to find out that it was pagan worship. So Abraham comes out of a family who were pagan worshipers. He is now up in the land of Haran, and God says to him in chapter 12, now the Lord said to Abram, notice his name hasn't changed, go from your country, from your relatives, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. The first thing I need for you to see is Abraham's security is being pulled out from underneath him. So the whole thing of being connected to his family, to the land, and all of his household goods are going to be pulled. Abraham has to let it all go. And I don't know about you, but I have connected to my family and Beck's family all of my adult life. I can't imagine not being connected to my family. And that's really hard. Following God for Abraham, I think, was not easy. Don't be naive in thinking that these people had it easy. I don't think that that's true at all. I think it was very hard. To go from Ur up to Haran is between 800 and 1,000 miles. You're in the desert. You're probably on camel. Those camels can probably move about 20 to 30 miles a day. So every 4 days, you've moved about 100 miles. There's 1,000 miles to cover. So they were on the road maybe 2 months, and they're moving all of their stuff from Ur up to Haran. And then when Terah dies, they go from Haran down to a place called Shechem. Shechem would be known in the Old Testament. That's where Joshua, there's two hills there, and Joshua would say to them, those who want to follow the Lord, you're over on this hill. Those of you who don't, you're over on this hill. And Joshua would say to them, today choose what you want to do. But that hasn't happened yet, isn't it? That's with Joshua. We're with Abraham, and he comes to Shechem, and he builds an altar and sacrifices. It's a moment of worship. What you may not have in your head is that he doesn't stay in Shechem. He goes down another 20 miles south into a place called Bethel, and right near Bethel is Hebron. So those little communities are all together, and that area would become known for Jewish people as their root. That's their root. But now I want to go through these promises with you because I think they're really significant. As you all have known, I've been going through, and we will go through, a number of character sketches, but we're taking a look at the place of faith in people's lives. And people without faith would become non-believers. People with faith, the beginning of faith, would be believers, or they're trying to put their lives together. They're starting to have beliefs. What is it that I believe? And then people who mature in their faith become those who trust in the Lord. But in Hebrew, no, in Greek, it's all one word. So it's very confusing. Hebrew does a better job at that. But faith is the word pistis. Belief is the word pistis. And trust is the word pistis. It's all the same. Non-belief in the Greek language, you always put an A before the word. So it would be a pistis or a pistuo. And that would be for people who aren't believers. What I would say for all of us is that we all come through a journey where we take the seed of faith in and it germinates. And by the way, if you're a gardener, here in a month you can put your potatoes in the ground. St. Patrick's Day. And for those of you who are gardeners, you can start your seed plants in your house. And in 6 weeks to 8 weeks, you can put your spring garden in. But you're right at that window where the seeds get planted, if it's inside right now. Anyway, let's start to take a peek at what happens with Abraham and this journey that he is in. So this happened, it looks like, about 4,000 years ago when there was a famine in the land of Canaan. Canaan would be the southern part of Israel. You're not in the desert there. That would have been the Judean desert, or the Negev is what they would have called that. And but Abraham has settled north of that, north of even Jerusalem. But there's a famine, and there actually is some records of a papyri found in Egypt that speaks of a famine about 3000 BC into the 2000 year window. And it was a famine for some 300 years. If you're a biblical student, you know that there would be famines off and on in that part of the world. And God used famines to move his people around. But now let's jump back into this story. Abraham and Abram, and then his name changes to Abraham when he takes on the promise. He would be known, and hear the word, if you listen closely, you can hear it. We oftentimes speak of Jews as Hebrews. The word in Hebrew is Abru. And that word means they're wanderers. So Abraham would have been known somewhat in today's terminology as a gypsy. There over in Israel today, you can go to where the Dead Sea is and you would see people like this, and they're called the Bedouins. And they are nomadic. They move when the weather moves to where they can get grass for their sheep and goats. They're nomadic. And Abraham would have been in that category. They today live under tarps. You can get the tarp over at Lowe's. And they stick them on sticks. And the difference between rooms is another tarp. So mom and dad, that's all you get between you and your kids and your animals. They're all under this tarp, all of them. Pretty crazy when you see them. Anyway, so the first one that we have that we see is that Abraham is told, the first commandment is go. That's the first commandment. And that is tough for a lot of us. I don't want to go. How do I know where I'm going? And even though Becky and Jerry said they had a map, the scripture says there was no map. God just said go. And you know, there's a lot of directions you can go. And Abraham, with his wife, just set out. And it goes from up there at Haran down to Shechem is about 700 miles. And you figure, if they had camels, they're moving maybe 25 miles a day. But then when you have all of these animals with you, you're moving slower. My guess is they moved at about 15 miles a day. So God has said to them, go, leave your security, leave your family, leave all his stuff, leave dad's stuff, and leave this land that you have become attached to. And I'm going to give you a new land. I'm going to give you the promised land. And that's where that word comes when you hear people say that Israel is the promised land. This all is rooted right here with Abraham. This is the promised land. We sing a song that Becky and Jerry taught us called Beulah Land. And the word Beulah means married in Hebrew. And it was that God was married to this land. And so they would sing of this marriage between God and this land that he took on like almost a marriage. Isn't it wonderful to think of? So God has decided to give Abraham this land. And for those of you that are historian type folk, you read this stuff. This whole thing with Palestine, and you would hear them the last 3 years say, we want all the land from the river to the sea. The river is the Jordan River, and it goes west to the Mediterranean. And that land is the land of Israel. That's what that land is. Palestinians that you would know that live in the Gaza Strip, which is just this little sliver of land right next to the Mediterranean. That's the Gaza Strip. And then north from Jerusalem up until about the Sea of Galilee is the West Bank. That's what that is. But they're separated. All of that land was given to Abraham. And then Abraham goes down to Egypt. He comes back. Then his descendants go to Egypt. They lose that land for some 400 years. But then Joshua comes back, right? And he conquers all that land. But all that land was part of God's promise to Abraham. So there's a number of things I would like for you to take away with yourselves this morning. But the first is this understanding of faith. So in Hebrews 1, it says, now faith is the assurance of things, do you know it? Hoped for, and the conviction of things unseen. So here is this man who God has called, and Sarah says, just like Becky and Jerry said, are you sure God talked to you? Can't you hear that conversation? Or in your marriages, ladies, do you believe and follow your husband completely all the time? I'm sure that that's the case. But there is this sense in which God spoke to Abraham. He didn't say this to Sarah. How is she supposed to know? But she follows and she goes. And that first promise is met when they land in Canaan, and God fulfills that promise. So let's try this again. Hebrews 11:1. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things. So my question for you this morning as we work our way through this is, in what areas of your lives are you being asked by God to step out in faith? Even though you don't know the answer, you don't know where you're going, but you're confident because by faith, you know that God has asked you to do this. One of the craziest things that I get the chance to do is I get to be with a bunch of the beloved pagans. And they often say, Bill, what you do is crazy. And I would say, well, what's the craziest thing that you can think of? And here's their line. This whole idea of giving away money. How does that work? You work all week, and then you give away money. How does that work? And I don't know about you, if you've ever had to explain it, I oftentimes say, I have no idea how it works. But here's my promise. I have more money now than I did before I gave my money away. Well, how does that work? I'm not sure how that works, other than it works. And you've got to act on your faith. You got to believe that God's going to provide. And when you do, trust and obey. When you trust and obey, here comes the next step to it. God will bless you. And then after he blesses you, you will have more clarity about your life's purpose and direction. But that's the sequence. You trust. You do what's asked. You begin to receive a blessing, and then you have more clarity about the next step in your journey. So the first thing I'd want you to see is that Abraham acted by faith and went to this land of promise. And that land is still on the earth. For those of you who might be interested, I'm probably going to go back to Israel in the next 3 to 5 years. If you want to be on that trip, catch up with me, and I'll get your name done, even if you're not sure. But I'm thinking I'm going to go back because there's some things I didn't see or I didn't get some answers to that I want to go see. Anyway, so the first is the land. Here comes the second one. The second one is that I will make for you a great nation. A great nation. So out of Abraham's seed, that would be the word seed, which in the human experience, we in English would call it sperm. In a spiritual sense, it's called spermatos, that God is going to place his seed of faith within you. And that seed is going to germinate, just like some people's gardens are going to germinate in the next 2 months. And that seed is going to pop open, and it's going to push through all that dirt, and it's going to come up. And if you know what you're looking for, it will look like whatever you planted. The rest of us will have to wait and see to see what that is. But it says, I will make for you a great nation. One of the things that we're going to navigate in the next couple weeks is this, that Abraham is the father of multitudes. And it says that there will be as many as stars as there are sand by the sea, or as many as the stars in the heavens. That's a lot. What's crazy is that you're one of those stars, because your spiritual father is Abraham. He comes from the godly line of Shem, coming out of Noah's boat. And that's the godly line that both Abraham would come through, but then all of that lineage of people, and it comes to fruition in the person of Jesus. But spiritually, we are descendants of Abraham. And so Abraham is known as the father of the three great religions on the earth: Jews, Christians, and Muslims. The Muslim faith comes to do with, and if someone wants to help Becky and Jerry, we can do another skit, although I don't think we're going to, but God promised Abraham and Sarah that they would have descendants, and they didn't. And now she is 99 some years old. She's 10 years younger. And she decides she needs to help God along. How many of you have ever helped God do what God's wanting to do? And how did that turn out for you? Usually not very well, because we get in the way of what God is trying to do. So we have to allow there to be time for God to play it out. Well, Sarah decides God needs help, so she goes to her maid, and this isn't exactly how it reads in Hebrew, but this is what happens. Hagar, I want you to sleep and have sex with my husband. And he does, and Hagar gets pregnant with this young one who is called Ishmael. And that would become the beginning root of the Islamic faith. And so that's why he's the father of all these. And this argument and fight over Israel in Palestine today is a family argument. It's between two groups who have the same father. Isn't that crazy to think of? Just crazy. But he's the father of the multitudes. Now, the other thing I would have for you is that in the scriptures, it could be debated that Abraham, apart from Jesus, is the greatest of the scriptures, because he is where God begins to give people the capacity to have faith. He's the father of faith, because it would say in verse 9 of chapter 12 that he believed God. In the book of Galatians, it would say he believed God and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. So he is the one. Daniel would be known as the person who was foretelling the future. Job would be a person of hope. And you can go through the scriptures and put all kinds of categories next to these people of faith. But Abraham would be the first one to believe God. Hear this passage out of Romans 4. It says, they did not waver in regarding the promises of God, but they were strengthened in their faith and gave God the glory, believing that he will do what he has promised. So now you and I have to wrestle with this whole idea. Do I believe in the promises of God? Have you ever felt your faith wavering? And that's what happens with Abraham. He is told to go and he does. He gets this land and he does. He eventually becomes this father, and his name would be Isaac. And pronouncing it, it would be Yitzhak, which means laughter. So when Sarah gives birth to this son, she's almost giddy. Wonderful, isn't it? And then he says this before we jump into this next part. He says that to Abraham, I'm going to bless you so that you will bless the nations. So you're blessed to be a blessing. So turn to your neighbor and say, neighbor,
neighbor.
You're blessed.
You're blessed.
And then the one you just said that to can say, and so are you for the world. See, you're not just blessed for yourselves. You're blessed for the world. And one of the questions that we have to ask ourselves is, how are we blessing the broken world around us? Are you willing to be a part of the brokenness of the people around you? Because you see, you have blessings that most of those folks will never have, nor even understand. But you do. And you're able to give what God has given to you, knowing that you can't outgive God. If you give it away, he's going to give you more. Now, what are you going to do with more? Isn't that crazy? How many of you, and Beck and I have talked about this, when we got married in 74, you know, we hardly had a pot to pee in, or however that phrase goes. You know, and now we have more than we've ever imagined. How many of that is true for you? See, you're blessed to be a blessing. And so our big question now is, how do we be a steward of everything we've been given? Because we have more than we need. How does that even work? Anyway, we're blessed to be a blessing. So here's Abraham, who has these four major promises that have been given to him. He did not waver regarding the promises of God. That comes out of Romans 4. But he believed in the promises. He believed that God would fulfill those promises. But in the journey of faith, we all have moments. If you have any of those moments lately where you say you believe, and then here comes a test, and you fail the test. How many of you have at times failed the test of faith? Me too. And I failed a lot of classes too because I was a goof. But that was high school. I got better once I met Beck and I started to actually study. But that's a whole other story, right? But in this story, Abraham, there's a famine down there in Canaan. And he says to Sarah, we're going to go to Egypt. And now this is my paraphrase. Sarah, you're a babe. Pharaoh's going to see you, and he's going to want you to be in his harem. And so, if he finds out you're my wife, he'll kill me so he can pull you into his harem. So if you say that you're my sister, and it was a half-truth, but you know, half-truths are still lies. Say that to your neighbor just in case your neighbor didn't pick it up. Half-truths are still a lie. So here we have this man of faith who can't believe that God would protect him when he goes to Egypt. Do you have that in your journey? I have it in mine. I know what it says, but God needs my help. And so I help God only to have it get all messed up. But you see, that's the wonderful part of this. Even though Abraham makes a mistake, God says to him, I will still bless you. Isn't that wonderful? In Hebrew, that is called Hesed, H-E-S-E-D. And it's God's incredible mercy and faithfulness to us in spite of ourselves. Isn't that amazing to think of? In spite of being the biggest screw up in this room right now, God is still blessing me and my family. And I would say to you, God is still blessing you in spite of mistakes you might have made. Because You're one of God's children. You're not a child of God because of good things you do. That's not it. You're a child of God because of Jesus. Nothing that you do. And the draw is for us to become more like him and to do what he asks so that we can be a part of what God is doing in the kingdom of God. It has nothing to do with age. It has nothing to do with money. It has nothing to do with status. It has everything to do with, are you willing to act on God's promises and believe that he can use you in remarkable ways to change the world? See, God is still changing the world, but it starts with you and me. Are you willing to allow him to use you? Trust and obey. When he says, do this, will you go? Will you, you know, you have $3 in your pocket, that's all you have. Are you willing to give to something and then to say, Lord, I don't have a lot of money, but they can have this. And then all of a sudden you watch what God does. And notice when you're with various people, they say, don't give glory to me. Give glory to God above. Because this is his doing. There's another phrase that I would have for you. It comes out of the Sermon on the Mount where it says, let men see your good works that they may glorify, that they will see your good works and they will glorify your Father who is in heaven. You see, you and I then become transparent and people can see God working through us. And so they don't see you, they see the Jesus in you. Are you willing to be that Jesus for others? And then I'll end with this quote. I believe that you and I are the closest some people will ever get to being near Jesus. What will they see? It would be Luke 9, I think it's 32. If anyone were to follow after me, he must first deny themselves, pick up their cross, and follow. That's the call. Deny yourself, pick up the cross, and follow. I'm not sure where that'll take you. What I am sure of is that you're going to have the adventure of a lifetime. And when you get to heaven, we will all be standing around eating Oreo cookies. And we will all get to tell our journey of faith, and Abraham and Sarah will be there with us. Let's sing this last song.